What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. This is Resistance in Residence, where we profile artists using their gifts to change the world. This week's Resistance in Residence guest is artist, organizer, social justice activist Fabiana Rodriguez. Fabiana, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Fabiana, I actually want to start with a bit about you, specifically where and how you grew up, what your family, what your community was like.
Mm-hmm. Well, I grew up in a immigrant Peruvian family in East Oakland in the Fruit Belt. My father was Afro-Peruvian, and so I grew up in a mixed Latin American family during the era of the war on drugs. And that era really shaped me because as a child, I instantly knew that I lived in a place where there was tremendous government neglect. There was violence, there was drugs, police brutality, pollution, and I could feel that it was unjust. Even as a child, the fact that I couldn't go out and play was very challenging for me. And at the same time, hip hop was being born. And in the streets, I could feel the power of art to help heal a community in a time of deep hardship. And art was always my safe place. It's why I didn't get involved in gangs. It was a place for me where I could be in my imagination, even though it was very hard to be outside. You know, the energy of the Black Panthers was still very present in the 80s here in East Oakland. And I lived in the same place ever since. I still live in my childhood home in the Fruitvale. And I feel that I've witnessed Oakland through so many transformations. But what I feel really proud about is that I was really shaped by a city that that really influenced protest and politics for the rest of the country.
And still continues to do so. We are absolutely the vanguard. You know, I talk about that all the time, which is why I'm going to get into this in a little bit. We cannot allow what folks are trying to have happen here happen, because if Oakland falls, the country falls. But before we get into to all of that deepness, you talked about arts being your safe place. I can so relate. The theater was my safe place. Now, that did not keep me away from the streets, et cetera. But it did help me make different decisions, right? So, like, I would run in with folks and I would do stupid stuff. But, like, when stuff was moving from stupid to ignorant, right, I was like, nah, I got to get to rehearsal. But I want to talk about – so I moved here, I guess I'm at 17 years ago now as a single Black mom. And I brought my Black child here, and it was a place where I was like, I can raise my daughter. You know, people said hi to each other, Black and brown people were engaged, of course, the politics, et cetera, because I was already radicalized. I want to tug on that thread when you said about being proud about how this community shaped you. I hear my daughter talk about that, right? That she is so grateful for being raised here, because the city shaped her into this amazing, vibrant, clear, political, radical, grounded young woman of color, unapologetic. And that's how I see you too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, I mean, first is that Oakland is tremendously diverse. I mean, even in my neighborhood, there's over 124 languages spoken. Wow. So the experiences of people from around the world combined with power movements, you know, it wasn't just the Panthers. It was the Brown Berets. It was the Native American Resistance Movement. You know, here down the street from where I live is the Native American Health Center. It was the Southeast Asians. It was the Japanese, right? Yuri Kochiyama was here. Yuri Kochiyama, mm-hmm. who was a Japanese activist who organized with Malcolm X. In fact, Malcolm died in her arms. And, you know, one thing that definitely changed my life was to meet the artists that had emerged from the Black Arts Movement and the Chicano Arts Movement in the 90s when I got to connect with the folks to co-found the Eastside Arts Alliance. And this was when I got to meet Bobby Seale and Amiri Baraka, Sonia Sanchez, Elizabeth Petita Martinez, you know, one of the Chicana journalists that had organized with SNCC. And they had what they were talking about. You know, we were beginning to witness the start of how we understand gentrification today. What they had talked about is that while there had been a lot of organizing around political power, you know, serve the people programs, that culture still remained a place that we needed to build real infrastructure. And I remember they would tell me about Nina Simone and how Nina Simone died without health insurance, right? And it just made me realize, like, wow, we, you know, here we are celebrating James Baldwin and Nina Simone and all of these elders who then had to create fundraising campaigns for their medical bills.
Yes.
And yep. That to me was not how I wanted to be an artist. And it also demonstrated that although artists had been so critical to movements, that we did not have a place for artists to go. We hadn't thought about the cultural centers. And of course, this is due to COINTELPRO as well, right? Because COINTELPRO devastated our movements and made it so that we could not build, you know, that kind of wealth. And when I say wealth, I mean, you know, music institutions, literature programs, cultural centers that could have emerged after the civil rights movement. They didn't, though. And so it was up to my generation and, you know, those of us who learned from the civil rights movement to then think about, okay, how do we build a lasting presence for artists in Oakland at a time of gentrification? And so I think like that kind of very expansive problem solving, right? It's not just about, hey, let's have a space to make art. It's about, hey, how are we going to own our building so that we can make art? That to me is like so Bay Area. It's so Oakland. It's about really thinking in new ways around how we sustain power, because we know that the things we do here influence the world. And we're on some, you know, we're on some next level stuff here. And that's, I think that has completely shaped me, because it has made me into an artist that, you know, I have a small business. I run my studio. I also am, I run a national nonprofit that supports other artists doing social change. In fact, last year we gave out $7 million to artists doing, BIPOC artists who are doing work at the intersection of art and social justice. And the reason that I have spent my life doing that is because I don't want to repeat what has happened to our elders, our cultural elders, who did not get their flowers and who actually had no economic stability to continue to do their work.
Yeah, I mean, artists, organizers, I mean, as Baba Shaka Ethinen, you know, as I watched him die of cancer. Right. Yeah. You know, and not have fresh vegetables, or, you know, really got to thinking about our elders and looking, you know, at our movement now and today. And yes, because of COINTELPRO and the way the government, you know, came to decimate liberatory struggle. And also like some of those, there's so many threads I want to tug on there, right? Mm-hmm. So there's what outside forces have done. And then it's like the lasting impact of those outside forces. So, you know, the organizers, activists on the right, they have no shame about acquiring wealth, land, et cetera, sustaining their families. On the left, a lot of times we are shamed for doing those things. There's That's an right. expectation of struggle and poverty to do this work. Mm-hmm. This idea that artists, right, sure, are just supposed to show up for free to events, and then this idea of artists as an afterthought, as opposed to part of the actual organizing strategy.
That's right.
Those are the threads that I pulled out of what you said, yeah. And I'd love to just hear you riff off that.
Yeah, well, so first is that we have to understand that money is a resource, and how we use that resource, just like growing food is a resource, right? There's the kind of growing food where you put chemicals into the ground and you exploit people. That's not how we want to grow food. We want to grow food in decentralized, small organic farms that are run by the people who were most exploited in the food industry. It doesn't mean we don't grow food. It means we grow food differently. When we are dealing with cash resources, with money, we need money in order to build the kind of visions that we have, right? And so in my small business, I give all of my staff a 401k. I pay for their health insurance, and therefore my art is not I think about that when I sell my art, and I have to think about that because I am not going to go work for someone who's going to exploit me. On the contrary, I want to create economic systems that are going to work for us. And I think it's, coming from this idea that there's a starving artist, that notion that we as artists don't know how to deal with resources completely works against us, and it allows for our exploitation. So I would say, no, actually, artists need resources just like, just like our movements who get funded as nonprofits, they get dollars raised because we actually, as people who have been impacted, and as we are descendants of people whose land was stolen, labor was stolen, that wealth actually belongs to us. And we have to be very confident in claiming that and actually using it to repair. It is the greed, the white supremacy that takes those resources and works against us. But we can liberate those resources, and we can build the kind of futures we want. I would also say that, working with artists to just have them come do a speech at your rally or show up at your gala and sing a song is extractive. And we don't want extractivism. Just like we don't want oil being extracted, we don't want labor being extracted. We need mutually beneficial relationships because artists are so key to any movement. And, I would say I grew up around the Panthers. I mean, they were no longer necessarily organizing on the front lines, but I understood the ideology. And I do think that, this idea of like, we have to struggle, we have to fight, and it's gonna like, we gotta do it till we drop, right? It's gonna take everything we have. I think that's a very male, it's a patriarchal view that doesn't honor our bodies. And it's been Black queer thinkers, Chicana queer thinkers, the women who wrote This Bridge Called My Back, who have given another frame, right? Which is that no, actually, we need to care for our bodies. We need to bring joy into our work. And we need to have sustainable systems because, how do you raise children when you're working all the time? You can't. And so I think that as an artist, the art is about bringing joy and possibility. And we cannot, as movements, just be limited to what's politically feasible, because politically feasible is a joke. It's not radical or revolutionary. And art can show us a way forward. Art is about the imagination, and the imagination is so powerful, right? If we can imagine what things can look like, the future can look like, what does freedom look like? What is liberation, justice, equity, all of that? What does it feel like? That will build the will for change. Because a policy is really something, it's an idea whose time has come, but in culture, in the arts, we build those ideas. So I think our work is indispensable. The last thing I'll say is the reason that we are in this place where people say, oh yeah, the arts, it's a cute thing, it's a nice thing to have, is because we're also living at a time when major regimes, whether regimes around the world, but even here in the United States in the 80s, Ronald Reagan dismantled, gutted the National Endowment for the Arts. He gutted it. He took all the resources out because he didn't like what gay men artists were doing. we are still living the repercussions of that, of a system that divested from arts because arts was very dangerous to their hegemony. And so we have to understand that we need to invest in the artists. It's just as important as people being in the streets for artists to be writing the novels, the films that are going to revolutionize our imaginations.
So much to unpack there. I say often, right? We've been throwing this word reimagine around, you know, for a couple of years in our movement. When I ran for mayor in 2018, my public safety platform was reimagine public safety. It's actually where that came from. One more phrase, movement, effort that came out of the town. And artists are how we do that, right? When I'm sitting on panels, people will often say, well, when you win, you know, what does abolition look like? What does an abolitionist society look like? And I'm like, I don't know, actually. And anybody who says that they definitively know what that is going to look like when we get there is lying to you. But the way that we can start to imagine what that's like, right, is the artist who paints it, the playwright who writes it, the dancer who dances it, right? And you're right, there is no movement without the artist. And you often see that when people are in liberatory struggle, one of the first things that the regime will do is go after the artist. We've seen that with this iteration, the genocide happening in Palestine, right? The direct attack mm-hmm. on artists and journalists, right? That people that can impact narrative because
yes.
they who control the narrative, right, hold the power.
That's right.
So speaking of narrative, Fabiana Rodriguez, mm-hmm. we are in, if you had told me, Fabi, 5 years ago,
yeah,
5 years, just 5 years ago, if you had told me I would be living in a city in Oakland, right? Not someplace in Texas or Kansas. I'm in Oakland, California. To your point, the birth of the Black Panther Party. Watching a right-wing seated effort to pull us to the right. Watching a replay of the tactics that were used in the 80s and the 90s, right? During the crack cocaine epidemic, manipulation of our people's pain, fear, and trauma to get us to sell our souls for the illusion of safety. And watching the town fight for it. Watching a police chief about to run for city council. Watching the interruption of democracy, right? And I use that word lightly, right? I don't know that America really does democracy, but what little of it we have, you know, through the voting process. And seeing it take hold in some, to me, scary ways. So first, as a native, right, your reaction to sort of the stories that are being told about the city that shaped you. And the second part of that question is your reflections on where we are right now politically. And then
yeah.
segue into, like, what is the role of art and artists? What is our job in this moment, Fabiana, to interrupt what is happening?
Mm-hmm. Well, first is that these narratives around policing and crime and, you know, the rise in crime, all of these things are a pushback of how effective we have been in creating a culture that knows we have to defund the police. And it's not just in Oakland, it's around the whole state. It's around the whole country. I mean, California used to be number one in incarceration, and now California has moved towards decarceration. And all of that is because of organizing, but it's also because of culture shifts, right? Artists, people, you know, like the film 13, right? Michelle Alexander's book, like people in sports actually speaking out against the prison industrial complex and around against policing. So we have created a successful cultural shift, and politics is always the last to fall in line. And we are the kind of narratives that we see now, similar to, you know, the pushback against trans people and the pushback to gay marriage. It is all a result of the supremacists, the people who want to hold on to their cultural hegemony. They will organize. They, in fact, are the right wing is organizing around immigrant hate and the hate of trans people. Those are cultural issues. And so if we ever doubt that culture is not powerful. Culture is what drives politics, right? It's all about core values. It's about how we see the world, how we see each other, how we interact with nature, our ideas about gender, our ideas about race. Those are all values shaped by our culture. And the more we can change culture, and the faster we can change it, it's just a matter of time before policies fall into place. However, we are going to go through a backlash, which is what we're experiencing now. And, you know, I'm actually a part of a group of cultural organizers, filmmakers, artists who are fighting and really trying to organize to get a film incentive in Oakland. The reason being is because I believe that a solution to, the reason that we have people committing petty crimes is because we don't have opportunities for them. We have supported an economic system in which wealth inequality, I've witnessed wealth inequality with my own eyes in my community, that we did not used to have people living on the streets the way we have people living on the streets now, where this is ground zero for wealth inequality. And so you're going to see it all here because it's extreme, extreme greed and extreme inequality that leads to displacement. It's the lack, it's the eroding of our social services, and it's the eroding of opportunity. And so I believe that culture is an opportunity. We have a creative workforce. Right? It is a great way for us to support jobs and opportunity if we can create stories about Oakland, films, music, right? And so I challenge a lot of these dominant narratives, and I always, you know, my approach is a dissolve and build. On the one hand, we don't need to be so reactive to these dominant narratives because we need to also focus on creating the narratives of the world we want. And sometimes we get so stuck in fighting back that we don't get to move into our creativity. And I think that our creativity, our vision of the world actually has so much power. And I really want us to be there around what's possible for Oakland when, you know, you have institutions that honor the legacy of the music here, right? The Pointer Sisters, Guapale, MC Hammer, like Too Short, the music that has come out of Oakland is amazing, right? Zion I, Hyro, like what musical legacy do we have and institutions for our young people? Imagine if we had that building, you know, and it is starting to happen, of course, with the cultural districts, but how do we double down on that as a solution and a remedy for our city?
So much I want to say there, but we are coming to the close of our time together, and I wanted to give you just a couple of minutes, Fabiana, to talk about what you're working on right now and mm-hmm. where folks can go to get more information about you and all of your amazing brilliance.
Yes, thank you. So what I'm working on right now, we are in a global culture shift moment. We are at a time when we are dismantling the narrative of domination, colonialism, militarism. And so I am focused on how to support a free Palestine, how to support divestment. I love that the students are so sharp on divestment because it's an excellent strategy. And as a cultural worker, the moment to dismantle these narratives is now. It is in front of us, right? Never before have we had a global moment to talk about the history of colonial forces and to begin to make unravel them, expose them, and move towards repair. And so I'm focused on that. I'm focused on how we are using this moment to talk about divestment, ending militarism, like also questioning where our resources go as taxpayers. So many things are possible right now, and I'm very focused on that. In these times of domination, in these times of genocide, we need to come together to think about how we support each other and how we double down and continue to organize, love each other, and art and culture help do that for us. And you can find all that information on my website at fabiana.com. And you could also find me on Instagram, Fabiana1.
You all are listening to Law and Disorder. I'm your host, Kat Brooks, and this is Resistance in Residence, where we profile artists using their gifts to change the world. This week's Resistance in Residence guest is artist, organizer, and social justice activist, Fabiana Rodriguez. Fabiana, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Kat. Talk to you soon.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA, that's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. Our Resistance in Residence theme music was composed by Jesse Strauss. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA, that's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listeners. If you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.